All right, ladies. Up.
This is Jason Albert, and you're listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. The Sadie system, as in the Sadie Bjornsson system, is on topic in this episode. That system involves a basic understanding of how hard and long to train and how to recover effectively, a question many athletes struggle to answer. But Bjornsson has overcome chronic foot injuries and arrived on the World Cup scene this year poised for podiums. She has 3 World Cup podiums so far this year, and she'll be competing in her second Olympics this February. We caught up with Bjornsson on January 18th while she was in Planitia, Slovenia, a few days before the races there. Okay, so you've probably been interviewed a lot lately, I'm sure.
It seems to be the exciting time, understandably so.
Well, yeah. So for you, do you notice, I mean, let's just jump right into it. Do you notice like a huge uptick in media attention because of the Olympics in particular or because of your success this year?
Yeah. You know, Olympic year is always fun because it's like every 4 years, the whole United States kind of signs into all the sports, and cross country skiing is certainly not one that is average popular in our country. It's not on TV, although now it is, which is exciting. But it's definitely, you know, the winter leading, or the summer leading into the Winter Olympics is kind of when everything starts getting exciting and the media starts following. And it's also really fun because it happens to be the time that there's been a lot of breakout performances on our team. So it's definitely the time is right for it. And I think it's going to be really good for our sport and kind of the future of our sport as well.
So I'm curious on like this uptick in media attention. What has been sort of the most unique media outlet that has approached you that, you know, really beyond the Olympic blip would have zero coverage of Nordic skiing? So where you've had to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, this is Nordic skiing and this is who I am. I'm just kind of curious what was kind of refreshing for you.
Well, I guess the most fun one has been Paula Poundstone. Originally, she sort of made a joke at our sport, but now is really turning it around, and she's actually going to show up and be on the start line for the American Birka Banner, which is really fun.
Are you kidding?
So that was kind of one of the more crazy ones. And then one of the more unique ones that is recently actually exploding is the story about my Lebequin experience and the injury that I've had. Got picked up by some kind of drug websites, from what I hear. I actually haven't seen it yet, but I have just gotten just a swarm of emails from people that have been affected by Lebequin and had their lives pretty much ruined by Lebequin. And so it's been like a lot of stories that are, I mean, truly hard to read because it's so sad to hear what this drug has done to people. And I've actually gotten to the point that I've kind of stopped reading them because, you know, that's sort of the way I've approached this setback for myself, is the less I know about it, the less of a limitation it is for me. So as an athlete, you are only affected by what you're going to allow yourself to be affected by. And so I've kind of just turned my eyes and ears from sort of the experiences of other people and tried to just find my own way. And so I actually got an email from a researcher recently who wanted to talk to me and just kind of share what she had learned. And I ended up writing back to her and just saying, you know, I really appreciate it. And this may be something that I would look into when I'm done with my sporting career. But right now I'm just focused on, you know, I found a way to make this work, and I'm going to continue in that process and focus on racing right now and not going down that avenue. So it's definitely been really interesting to hear all these stories from people, but mainly just like have people email to say, thank you for giving me hope. You know, like it's incredible to see that somebody is racing at an Olympic level and overcome this. So thank you for giving me hope. And that's like the best feeling ever. Like that's what I want. to go about, and I want to educate people too. But yeah, that's been a very unique thing that I would have never expected in the past.
Can you just, if people have sort of started reading Faster Skier in the last 12 months or the last 24 months, can you just briefly describe a little bit about what your experience was with the drug?
Yeah, so when I was a junior in high school, or actually a senior in high school, I had a sinus infection, and I took several different rounds of antibiotics and eventually got prescribed Levaquin. And at the time, the doctor told me it was a 3 in 10,000 chance of this very rare side effect of Achilles tendinopathy or Achilles rupturing. And I thought, oh, of course, like that's too small for it to happen to me. And sure enough, it did actually end up happening to me. And I just struggled with tendonitis and got to the point that really I couldn't walk around. Like in high school, I couldn't walk from class to class. And from there, just my feet really fell apart. All the different tendons and muscles got super weak. And ever since, I've struggled with various forms of tendonitis all over my body. And so I've had to really adjust my lifestyle, adjust my training in order to sort of battle with it. Yeah, I have adjusted my training, and I kind of just do a lot more shorter workouts. I went through several years where I would do 3 or 4 workouts a day of really short amounts until I've gradually strengthened things. But I definitely have always been prepared and ready to take on new forms of tendonitis that come about. And so, yeah.
Do you feel okay, you know, in terms of your feet right now? You're obviously skiing at a top level, but do you feel okay?
Yeah, I mean, I currently have feet things going on over here, and so it's kind of never really a day that I don't have something going on, but I definitely I've been able to adjust things and work with it. So yeah, it's been good.
I'll take a step back. Where are you right now, and what are you up to?
So I'm in Planica, Slovenia. It's actually the first time I've ever raced here at this venue, and we have a classic sprint and a 10K classic race this weekend. So we're just kind of training and getting ready for that.
Okay. And as you kind of, I know you guys only have a few more weeks of World Cups before the Olympics begin in early February. I believe February 9th maybe is the opening ceremonies, but
yeah,
not sure. I'm curious, like, what is your run-up look like to the Olympics in terms of competition and training? I know, like, guys like Alex Harvey and Kershaw do like a traditional several week altitude camp right now, but mm-hmm. But what does your run-up look like?
So this year I planned to do the full Tour de Ski, just to kind of create a load. The way that peaking works is you generally create a big load and then you rest, and maybe then create a smaller load and then rest. So that's kind of the way that I plan to do the whole tour. And then I just got done with a kind of a week and a half of rest, basically. It took me about a week to recover from all those races. And then I started training again. And so I'm going to do one of the races this weekend and then both races next weekend. And so it's kind of just the final preparation phase to head into the Olympics. And you don't always feel amazing necessarily right now, but kind of one of the more important things is to remember that it's still, I think it's 24 days out from the games. And so the feelings definitely, they can come around even the next day, or maybe they come right away. So just an optimistic approach and just stay positive about where we're going to go from here.
Okay. So I'm going to kind of do kind of brief rundown of your year here. I mean, so far, and you are, and I just kind of took some notes from the FIS site, but 9th overall, the Tour de Ski, I believe, mm-hmm. 3 podiums this year, 2nd in a classic in Ruka, 3rd the next weekend in Lillehammer, also in a classic sprint mm-hmm. where you qualified 1st, 3rd in a 10K classic, stage 2 of the Tour de Ski, I believe, mm-hmm. and plenty of top 10s, 7th overall in the World Cup, 6th in sprint, 11th in distance. This summer, I'm kind of curious, you guys know your physical sensations, I'm sure, when you're training all the time and sort of what those may or may not correlate to when you get on snow. Did the sensations you had maybe in the late summer and the fall kind of correlate to where you are right now?
You know, I had a really unique summer of training. It started off on kind of a rough note. I was really injured at the beginning of the season. I had a back thing going on, a knee thing, and a foot thing all at one time. And I'm used to having injuries, but this one was particularly hard because it felt like there was literally nothing I could do. So it kind of took some patience to get started, especially because it was the Olympic summer and you never want to start like that, you know, on that foot. So I started a little slower than I wanted. I kind of started getting things together, and then I headed home actually to the Methow for the women's camp. And once again, I had another really big flare up with heel spurs, and that was really hard because I had to leave the camp in my hometown and not participate in anything. And that was definitely really a low part of my summer. So once I got back, I just, you know, I took the time to recognize that it hadn't been the perfect start. I was kind of chasing around, trying to follow the schedules of everybody else and trying to be a good teammate among my US ski team teammates, and it was time to kind of come home and do my own thing. And so that's when I started doing a gradual progression to get to my healthier state. And by the end of July, and then actually our glacier camp in August, I was finding a really stable place. And so it was cool because I had a really awesome second half of the summer. And that was kind of the time where I was, you know, feeling healthy enough and stable enough that I did a much bigger push on load and intensity, something that I've never really had a chance to do. And it was really cool. It was like a huge mental challenge. But it left me really tired for pretty much 2 or 3 weeks. And that was right about the time that I was headed to Park City Camp in October. And that was then I was sick all through US Ski Team Camp there. So, you know, it was kind of a strange year for me in that I never really got to participate in camp with my US Ski Team teammates. And so it was definitely, you know, like one of those emotional roller coasters. And I had no idea what to expect coming into the season because intervals hadn't been going great. I was kind of just behind in everything, what I felt like. And so when I came into Kusumo and had those really awesome races from the start, it was just kind of one of those things that makes you just realize, like, it makes you think about all the tough times that you went through to have those amazing times. And so it was really like, it was a great way to start in that place. Yeah. And just remind myself that you don't necessarily have to look like the person beside you in order to maybe beat the person beside you. And so it was definitely a cool summer in that way. I challenged myself more than normal, but also kind of had more struggles than normal at the beginning. And but that's kind of my way. And as my sports psych always says, that's the Sadie system. And you just have to find a way to really believe in the Sadie system. And that's when you're going to find the best place. And so I feel like a lot of things have come together for me this year, not just my training, but also, you know, all the other elements of your life that go into ski racing. And so I think it's cool that it's happening in a year that it's an Olympic year, because that's when you dream and hope it can be.
What did you learn a little bit about your own physiology and the power of the rest state or recovery state and how much that may benefit you? And I'm just making the assumption there, you know, without asking you how many hours you did or didn't do, I'm assuming due to all the injuries that perhaps you had more rest state time than normal.
Yeah. I definitely, you know, as you get older and become more experienced in your sport, you learn to appreciate that rest is just as important as pushing yourself. In the past, I've always kind of felt like that was a strength of mine, that I was able to read my body really well and understand when I need rest versus when I can push myself. And I think I've always kind of been under-trained as opposed to over-trained for that reason. And so I think that's why this year was so fun, is that for the first time I kind of played with that line of too far versus not enough. But then again, like, that's when you really have to start respecting the rest. And we have a cool thing at APU that a lot of our training is in blocks. So we do 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And in that 1 week off, it depends on the specific athlete. Some people, they need one whole week off, maybe more for your brain than for your muscles.
Sure.
And other people, they feel like they only need one day off. So that week is kind of up to your decision. And this year I found, like, you know, after I did that huge intensity push in September, that 1 week off, I took the entire week off. And I did some things like, you know, go out in the mountains and go hunting with my fiance, or like, you know, fun things that are so different. Of course, not sitting on my butt, but
sure.
Doing more of a mental break. And what I've realized is that mental rest is actually just as important as physical rest. And for those of us that are racing full World Cup seasons, maybe 40 races a year, and you're asking your mind to turn inside out, you know, weekend after weekend, sometimes 9 days, or I mean, 7 races in 9 days doing it like that. And I've learned that, yeah, rest is not just resting your muscles, it's also resting your mind, and you have to respect both of those, and it's equally as important.
So kind of piggybacking on this whole context of kind of a new kind of, well, maybe the old experience of dealing and juggling with injuries, but sort of balancing rest and trying to peak.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously did ski the whole Tour de Ski,
mm-hmm.
and were quite successful. You know, if you can just kind of rewind a little bit, maybe as you were going through your race schedule with the U.S. coaches and maybe Eric Flora, you know, what was your rationale for doing the Tour de Ski this year? And, you know, did you hesitate perhaps a little bit about completing it just because you've had a bit of a funky, I guess, preseason?
Yeah, you know, like for me, even when I have funky preseasons or funky training summers, I think most people would assume that that means that I didn't do as much training. And if you were to be a fly on the wall, just understanding the training life of Sadie Bjornsson, it's actually crazy. Like when I'm injured, I often feel like I actually do more training and get stronger during those times. So maybe if I wasn't running or roller skiing, I was in the pool or ski erging. And so I still had equal, if not more, actual time spent training. So sure, it definitely looks different, but I definitely made a step up in training. So I wasn't worried about making it through the Tour de Ski. The one thing is, in the past, I've gotten sick a lot during the tour or sick right after the tour. And that's something that I always try to avoid, because when you're sick, oftentimes, for me, I always think it's when I'm tired and didn't rest enough. And so I think it's like kind of a natural thing that comes for me. Like there's a reason that I get sick. And so my goal this year was to like sort of try to figure that out before it came. And I felt like in period one, I was really good about managing the load and, you know, not pushing myself midweek if I was tired from the weekend. And so the plan was to go through the entire tour and then be really good about resting afterwards, so that it was not a level of fatigue that I was bringing all the way to the Olympics. And I think that's the most important thing for me, is to respect the rest afterwards. And a lot of times that means, you know, separating myself from my teammates, because we all recover at different rates and in different ways. And so that was kind of, when we talked about it, it was more of a focus on what are you going to do afterwards, rather than, you know, how's the tour going to look and how's it going to act on your body. The focus was what is the goal afterwards. And so I feel like I definitely had a really successful week afterwards, and that I was very good about resting a lot and taking it super slow. And so that was kind of the theory behind it all.
Okay. And are you guys, I know this is like a nitty gritty question, but I'm always kind of curious.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause you might, do you guys, like, are you a person that just keeps hand sanitizer in your pocket, like during the Tour de Ski and after, or are you just like methodical about hand washing kind of thing?
This year, so I have had this crazy thing happen this year that I've developed a bunch of allergies, and I'm allergic to down and to like kind of dust and,
oh man,
a lot of pollen and stuff. And it's been really challenging for me this year, like a whole new thing to take on, because down is in every pillow, every comforter, everybody's jackets. It's literally everywhere. So And also dust is really hard to avoid. And I had this theory that all these allergies came on because I used hand sanitizer too much.
Don't tell me that.
which is definitely like one of those theories. This is not any form of proven fact, Sadie theory. And so this year I made it a goal to do more actual just hand washing rather than hand sanitizing, because if there's a bathroom around, it's just as easy to run to the bathroom and wash your hands for 20 seconds under the water with soap.
Okay.
So I've been taking that approach this year, but definitely during the Tour de Ski, I'm pretty careful about germs and taking vitamin C at nighttime. And we had some illness on our team throughout the tour, and so I knew it was around. But, you know, like the rule of thumb is the more you stress about it, the higher risk that you have of getting sick. And so
sure. If
you can try to just be relaxed and be confident in your immune system and eating your vegetables and, you know, just knowing that your body's going to work the way that it's supposed to, then that's kind of the approach I've taken this year.
Here's a question for you, kind of relating to maybe about what your goals might be in Pyeongchang and sort of having a little bit of perspective now as an old, how old are you right now, actually?
I'm 28.
But you've been on the World Cup for a while, and this will be your second Olympics. And there was a quote somewhere, or you had said something that maybe that the first Olympics were for your childhood dreams and these Olympics are for your adult dreams. that's one of
yep,
our
that
like,
sounds, yeah, no, I, it sounds like something I said.
you know, I'm kind of curious, how are you approaching these second Olympics, and particularly, you know, maybe how is that different than your first Olympics?
Yeah, so I definitely, you know, it's really exciting to be going into Olympics knowing that I'm fighting for a medal, not just in the team events, but potentially some individual events as well. It's a position that I have dreamed my whole life of being in. So it's really fun. Yeah, the last Olympics, I just remember making the team and how big of a deal it was, and going into processing and getting my Team USA uniform and all the fun opening ceremonies outfits, and then getting into, you know, the athlete village and just seeing that we had cards to get free Coke any hour of the day, and just like, you know, all those little things that you're like, okay, heaven, I didn't even know heaven could be this nice.
Yeah.
And so I was just kind of in a daze the whole time. And it's cool. I'm really happy I did that, because now I feel like I got that fix. And now when I go to the Olympics, I definitely want to still keep that excitement and fun factor, because I think that's what makes me have the best races, is when I'm really loving the process and not too serious, because serious never works well for me until I get on the start line, and then I certainly notch into that serious zone. But, you know, I think it's cool because this year I'm going and I'm trying to not, I kind of relate it to like pacing a 30K. Last Olympics, I went out really hot. I was so excited about everything that midway through the games, I was sick and tired and worn out and didn't necessarily have the energy for the races that I needed. And so this year I just feel a little more prepared for what's coming my way. And also I have a really big goal and a really big dream that I want to accomplish. And I think there's this awesome vibe among our team that there's all of us that are dreaming of this medal. It's not just one person on the team. And I think that makes a really cool atmosphere and a lot of excitement going into it. One thing that's a little unique is that many of us haven't ever been there, so we don't really know what to expect, which will make it really fun, because you show up and it's this new place and new location and new food and new culture, and I think that will provide an element of a lot of excitement and kind of just take the pressure down and, you know, just make things fun and exciting going into it. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I'm approaching it.
Okay. And so here's my last question, and it's kind of a non sequitur. I should have asked this a little bit ago, but in kind of the context of your success this year, and, you know, I obviously follow the sport. I've talked to a bunch of people who follow the sport, but it definitely seems to be a different type of year on the World Cup. You know, you have a 21-year-old on the guy's side in Klebo who's been ripping. And you know, it's funny, like my kid last night made me watch his vlog for the first time. I'm like, he looks like,
oh yeah,
he looks like a he's young, you know. I'm just like, wow, I can't believe this dude is dominating. And then on the women's side, you know, you have an athlete like Bjorgen, who I believe last year won 5 medals at World Champs off the top of my head. I mean, she was still dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to be, although I believe she swept all the events at Norwegian Championships, to her standard, she's skiing, you know, below her usual probably benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, what is it about? I'm just curious, like, what is the vibe like now on the starting line for you and the Women's World Cup in general, that it seems more wide open?
Yeah, you know, I actually had a ski with Trace Stadlober a few days ago, because we were training in Ramsau, and we were actually discussing this exact thing, because she just got her first podium in Valley Fam, the second to last day of the Tour de Ski. And I was asking her, are you still in the clouds, like full of excitement? And she was like, yeah, I am. It's something I was dreaming of. And I was like, you know, it's the same for me. And I don't know, the way that I see it now is it's so fun, because you show up on the start line and it's not outrageous to believe that you could win. And that's the way that everybody wants to race. Like, that's what motivates people, is when they feel like they have a chance to fight. And I think it's really good for our sport too, that it's switching up and there's different people on the podium each weekend. I think that's the very best thing that could happen for a sport, to keep it exciting. And I think the Norwegians are also gaining a new respect for some of the others and some of the other teams, and seeing other people as a threat. And while they're still very dominant, there's definitely, you know, they have to stay on their toes. And one of the quotes that Mikan said in Lillehammer, and the press conference, none of the Norwegians had qualified the first weekend in Kusamo. And the second weekend, you know, she won, but she said, like, I realize that I can't take anything for granted. I need to be just so ready to fight all the time. And so I came here really nervous and excited. And I think that's really refreshing to hear out of the Norwegians, that they don't just count themselves as the winners, that they see some of the others as, you know, threats to them as well. And I think it makes it really fun. Like, I feel like everyone becomes better friends that way too, because it's just, I think it's just more fun for everybody like that. So, it's a cool scene.
Congrats on your season so far, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Not using hand sanitizer, staying away from dinner.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I'm going to have my kids like listen to this, because I'm one of those, like, I have like a gallon jug of hand sanitizer in the cars. You know, I'm like.
Well, yeah, you know, our whole team is like that. Actually, we all travel with sanitizer, and there's certain times where it's just like, you know, when you're on the airplane, it's, you got to pull it out, or when you see, you know, you're touching something in a buffet line and there's not a bathroom nearby. I think there's definitely a time and a place, and it makes you sleep well at night. So you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Sadie, and good luck in Korea. And hopefully I get to see you in some press conference. That'd be good.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Jason. All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Nordic Nation.